Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
All right, welcome back. 4 o'clock hour of the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk for a Wednesday afternoon. We do have a roundtable set up for Friday. State Rep Donna Behringer will be here pinch hitting for Jane. She is off this week. I think she has duties as a mother for her daughter going off to college, which will be very special. Alderman Jack Coder on the panel. State Rep Mary Elizabeth Coleman. That's all coming up on Friday. In the next hour, Congressman Billy Long, he's in the southwest part of the state. He actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think he took the seat. Obviously, there's been some rewriting of the districts, but he took the seat that Congressman Blunt gave up to go to the Senate. So he would like to follow that path and make that full circle. He's running for the Senate. He went on Tucker Carlson last night and kind of let the cat out of the bag. Some of us expected this announcement next week, but he's going to join us just after 5 o'clock. We have Sue's News coming up here in a few minutes, but I'm going to let you walk us into our next guest here, Sue.
Our next guest is Rachel Jacobs. Now, Rachel's mother and I are college friends, and Rachel went to Kirkwood. Her mom lived here, went through high school, and then she graduated and is now at Fordham. Isn't that right, Rach?
Yes, I'm going to be a senior at Fordham this year. And very excited about it.
So she is in New York City. And Rachel, here's what the deal is. You somehow, I want you to walk us through the process, but the bottom line is you have somehow become a ball person for the U.S. Open, and I think this is just incredibly cool.
I love it, too. Yeah, Rachel, tell us about it. These are, I guess this would be most commonly known as the people that shag the balls when the tennis players are playing their tournament, right? So how did this all come together?
Yeah, I just sort of, it just sort of happened. My dad sent me an email that just, like, said they were hiring. I was like, oh, I'll apply. Like, just kind of on a whim.
Yeah.
And then I heard back, and they're like, oh, we want you to come try out. And I was like, oh, my gosh, tryouts for a ball girl? Like, what does that even mean? And I went, and they pretty much just had us, like, run after balls for, like, 30 minutes. And then I got an email that I got the job and to send in my availability. And so it just kind of came about. I don't really know.
But when you say, like, was John McEnroe out there just whacking tennis balls and you just had to run them down? Was there a machine involved? You got to get a little bit more specific here.
It was, like, there was groups of five and, like, a coach watching us. And we just threw the ball into the net, would run and get it. And then would throw it, like, to the server. Someone was acting as a server. There were no actual tennis players there. It was, like, a coach and then all the ball people that were trying out. And we just, like, were throwing balls for each other to go run after.
I love this. Okay, Rachel, while you're doing this, can you tell who's the weak link and who isn't going to make it? I mean, are there people that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's
And are you able to shoulder bump some of them and get them out of the way? That's another thing I would ask.
I was told that if you're good, you get to do the finals. So, you know, I may have to shoulder bump someone so that I could be there for the final few days because I want to see the good matches towards the end.
Now, was it just a job opportunity, or are you passionate about tennis? Do you play tennis? Is it something you were interested in from that perspective as well?
I like watching tennis. I've never really played. Like, I know how to play. I never was competitive in it. But I've been to the U.S. Open twice before, so I knew what it was like, and I've always liked it when I went. So I was like, oh, why not apply?
I've never been to the U.S. Open.
I haven't either,
It's on
Rachel.
My list. It is on my list of things to do, for sure.
Okay, now the next step is you actually go and have a seminar, right? When does that happen, and tell us what that is?
Yeah, so I'm going to get trained. It's a two full-day training, and I think pretty much we're going to be getting our uniforms. We're going to get, like, full set uniforms and then pretty much learn all the rules, and then we start on August 24th.
How many different ball people are there on the court at one time? Do you know?
I believe there's four,
wow.
But don't quote me on that.
Well, because there would be one behind one server, one behind the other, and then each
two, one
at
on
the
either
net,
side
right?
at the net. Yeah. I would think.
Yes.
Rachel,
okay,
do you find out, because I, of course, want to watch you, but do you find out, well, I guess you don't know yet, you get trained, but then do you find out, here's which matches you'll be in so we can all watch for you on TV?
Yes, I know the days I'm working. They said I'd get the specific times and hours and stuff in a few weeks, so I will eventually know it leading into it, yes.
Do you know any more specifics about what the training will involve? Obviously, just kind of running you through the do's and don'ts and things like that, and how not to get, you know, a ball in the face from Roger Federer, whoever does that.
Oh, my gosh!
Yeah. I think the main stuff we've heard about is, like, getting fit for our uniforms, like, and that's pretty much all I've heard, and just that we need to be in, like, running shoes for the day that we go.
I would say. Well, you got to be excited. Maybe a little nervous, but excited, too.
I am really excited. I am a little nervous because I'm a bit clumsy that I'm going to fall in the middle of the court.
You are not going to fall.
Oh, please do. I'm just saying.
No,
please do.
No,
we need the viral moment.
Be great.
Then we'll definitely have you back on.
Hey, Rachel.
Yeah, I'll be on the Sports Center.
Rachel, I had a question. And you mentioned falling. Is there a lot of squatting? I mean, how are your knees?
Yeah,
are you going to
yeah.
survive
yeah.
this?
I've been told that one of the positions, you pretty much squat the whole time. I'm hoping I can just avoid that and be the one that stands up. But I probably will have to squat for, like, a match or two.
And if you're the one that has to stand up, it looks to me like at every start of a point, they throw three balls to the server, and the server always rejects one of them.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
And how do they
yes.
know what they're rejecting?
We actually had to practice our throws to the server for, like, 20 minutes at the tryout day. There's a very specific point they want you to get it at. So I'm hoping I'm that person.
That'll love be fun. This so
well, keep
much.
Us posted. We love the story. Rachel Jacobs, Sue introduced us because you and her mom went to college, and she's going to go with her training. And then the tournament starts on August 30th, correct?
Yes, correct.
Through Labor Day.
Oh,
all right,
Rachel. So good to talk to you. Do really well so you could be meeting the really great tennis players and tell me about it. I love it.
But, I know. I'll try my best.
Okay, but stumble on the court at least
no,
once. Just one time, okay?
Okay, I'll
right.
try.
See you, Rachel. Take
Thanks,
care.
Rachel. Thank you.
I love
that's
that.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's good. But, I mean, that's the one thing that you'd have in your mind is, oh, God, dear Lord, please don't let me fall down and do like a somersault
get
on TV.
Get my foot caught up in the
yes.
net while
yes.
I'm running across.
And I think to answer Fred's question, because I play, or I used to play quite a bit,
you used to play what?
Tennis.
You used to play tennis.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh,
up until probably I was 25
Fred,
or so.
Book that segment for Friday at, you know, 5:20, please.
Well,
I can't wait to hear this one. Are you kidding me?
I actually, you know what? I used to play often enough that my dad and I, when we played, we'd actually, in more ways than one, kind of fool this guy who was watching us play, thinking we were good enough to join the Creepcore Racquet Club.
Wow.
That's
yeah,
funny.
I
not
wish
that good.
I wish I could play tennis because I was a racquetball player, and I do love watching it. And we kind of have this running joke. My wife, I think she's picked up a racket a few times in her life, but she always talks about how she wants to play. And the running joke, Sue, you'll appreciate this, because I think there are still tennis courts at Carondelet Park, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We would, when I lived in Holly Hills, we'd drive by those, and I'd see someone's ball on the court and say, hey, were you, because my good buddy Mike Fitzgerald Fitz, I said, hey, were you and Fitz, you know, playing tennis? Is that your ball down there? And then we went out to a baseball game one time years ago with the current attorney general and his wife, and I think it was the first time that Becky ever met Jamie. I ended up doing some stuff for Eric with some of the charity work and MC, and you know, we became friends. But Jamie and Becky bonded right away at a baseball game, and they had tennis in common. They wanted to play tennis. What do you think the over-under on the amount of times that Jamie and my wife have played tennis over the
negative
last,
two.
Would that be zero?
Yeah, there has not
yeah.
been one time. But so that's kind of like the running joke. Oh, whenever you see something tennis related, look at you can probably, you know, serve it up this
it's
weekend
a fun
with
sport.
Somebody.
It. Listen, we had Thomas Family Tennis Night when I was growing up. We did it every Tuesday. And it's fun.
It really is.
A lot of tennis courts now are pickleball courts.
Well, they are.
Yeah,
they
right.
did that to Carondelet. Part
yeah,
a portion of those are now pickleball.
And I've never done that, but that
oh,
actually looks
so
like fun.
That's
it
fun,
looks like
too.
A lot of fun. Right.
You would love it.
The thing about tennis that kind of drove me away is because I played racquetball, I would hit all these home runs in baseball, too. And I just... Serving is difficult in tennis. It really is. I mean, so you're just going to lob it over. But I love the game. I wish I could play a little bit more. Anyway, we got to get to this here this afternoon. Thank you, Sue,
yeah.
for helping us with that. Uh-oh. Wouldn't hurt if I turned the volume
that's
up here.
All right.
And see, then
know,
I have to
the
pause.
Details.
Okay, here we go.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Okay, we loved the Olympics last night. I will just do a little bit of it. Fred, did you see any?
Well, yeah, I saw pretty much everything we could see.
And you saw Simone. What did you think? I thought she was great. I thought better than bronze. What
you
is
know,
your opinion?
I thought she was really good. I think they only marked her off a little bit because her dismount was easier than what it was supposed to be.
So difficulty
she didn't get
level.
Difficulty level, yeah.
If you saw the race where it was the first time a U.S. female has won the event since 1968, that would be the wrestling gold woman who was so cute.
Right, right.
But then we had Sydney McLaughlin, who just barely beat out Delilah Muhammad to win gold and set a world record in the 400-meter hurdles. It was incredible.
Can I play Tamara here?
Let's hear her.
Because she's just awesome.
Now that I'm on the stage and I am a black woman on the Olympic stage and I have a gold medal, there are younger people, like take Kennedy Blades, for example. Like she can see herself on the stage and go, she did this.
All right, and this is good, too.
Question for you. That American flag around your shoulders looks pretty good. How does that feel to represent your country like this?
It feels amazing. I love representing the U.S. I freaking love living there. I love it, and I'm so happy I get to represent U.S.A.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, she's no Gwen Berry. We'll just say that. Leave it at that, right? I love it. That was
awesome.
That
was the first gold medal winner in women's freestyle wrestling, and she was adorable. Okay, American and Spirit Airlines are trying to play catch-up after that bumpy start. Have you heard the story?
Yes.
About what is going on?
Bad.
I'm not familiar with this one.
American, Dave, canceled nearly 400 flights yesterday, 560 on Monday, 300 on Sunday. It was a bad weekend storms at a Dallas hub. But Spirit canceled more than 400 flights yesterday, and they're saying they had done hundreds of flight cancellations on Monday. They're calling it operational challenges. Everyone, of course, wonders whether they've been hacked. You see what
I mean? That's not good.
And I cannot imagine the frustration of having plane tickets to get out of town.
I think their password was Spirit Airlines 123456 exclamation point. That's why they got hacked.
Password? Yeah.
Hey, I never thought about the exclamation point.
Well, because now you got to add that in there.
Oh, that's
so
true.
It's a character. You have to have a character.
Uh-huh.
For it.
Doesn't everyone have an exclamation point in their password? I think
everyone does.
Well, Dave was trying to get past the paywall that I used today, and I had to give him the ID.
Yeah.
So basically, now he has my banking ID, my mortgage, all that. Just start logging in,
Dave. There you go.
Oh, that's funny. Amazon Studios is doing its own Lord of the Rings original series. Did you hear this?
I've heard
no
a little
idea.
Bit about this, but not. Okay. I don't know the details.
I've never seen the movies.
You haven't?
No,
This is
this is a guy that hasn't seen Star Wars either. So just move on.
Okay.
All
he's without
we'll
help on some of these issues.
Okay. They're going to have new episodes every week. No one has said how many episodes per week, but it will be on September 2nd of 2022 on Amazon Prime. They don't even have a series name yet, but if they call it something attractive enough, maybe Dave will watch it.
Did they say it would be kind of the same type of characters?
Here's the thing. Thank you for asking, Fred. They're going to do... this is set thousands of years before the events of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So you're going to see the series will follow an ensemble cast of characters, both familiar and new, as they confront the long-feared reemergence of evil to Middle-earth. Now, I don't know how you're going to have a familiar character if it's 1,000 years before The Hobbit, but I haven't read the books.
So I watched all... I love those movies.
Yeah.
I was into them, but I honestly have no interest in going back and maybe watching
doing
them
it again.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the same way, and I don't remember all the details that people tend to remember from those things.
Didn't the cast have Rudy?
Yes.
Didn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying
to
look
movie,
that up.
In the Hobbit? Yes.
Okay.
What's his name? You say Rudy. He played Rudy, right? The actor's name. What's his name?
Always,
we had a good conversation with him a couple years ago.
Now I've caught up with you.
They always had really good battle scenes in those movies.
They lasted like 40 minutes each one. There were three battle scenes and then one regular scene, and that was a four-hour movie, essentially. Dave, who was Rudy? Damn it.
Come on, are you looking it up?
Isn't it Sean something?
Sean.
Came to Comic-Con. Yeah. Remember
Sean Astin.
Sean Astin. Yeah. Fred, we had him on maybe 2-3 years ago.
He was
really
fantastic.
Good. Oh, was
he?
I always thought he looked like a nice guy. All right, a recent poll has found what the most attractive jobs are for men and women. Now, this is when it comes to dating. I'm not saying anybody in here is dating, but if you were, what are the most attractive jobs for men? Doctor, number one. Lawyer, number two. Carpenter, number three. Shout out.
One of these things is not like the other.
Not producer?
No, I'm so sorry, Fred. No.
Well, it was a good try, though,
Fred. How about Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
For women, nurse, elementary school teacher. No, high school. No. No middle school.
Just elementary school.
Just the cute little
kids.
But
what are we basing this on as far
as... Dating. This is what people are looking for when they're looking for a woman.
So women are saying, well, lawyers, doctors,
yeah,
that would be typical.
Yeah, I want a lawyer, a doctor, or a carpenter.
There's a guy that's saying, I want an elementary school teacher.
Yeah. Dave, hello. I was going to say, that's me.
Good move there.
And number three.
She didn't want a radio producer, but she stuck with me.
Well, you could become a carpenter.
I could.
Hey. Yeah, or a lawyer.
Don't do that, there's still
please.
Time.
Okay. And a doctor for women, too, but it's number three. If you're looking for a woman, you're going nurse, elementary school teacher, and then doctor.
Oh, for guys, too.
Yeah, that's okay. What guys are looking for.
Really?
As evidenced by our own Dave. And I'm going to do two random facts. First one is that Quentin Tarantino's first job in Hollywood was as an Elvis impersonator on an episode of The Golden Girls in 1988.
Knew that.
I did
yes.
not know that.
I actually knew that.
I've seen that episode.
Yep, seen
have you
clip.
Really?
I have.
Did he look like Elvis? Was he any good?
He's in all the garb, so you can't really tell that it's him.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
And finally, James Smithson. Now, this is the man who donated the money to the U.S. to start the Smithsonian, was British, had never visited America, and no one knows exactly why he gave this country his fortune when he died.
And we thank him for that.
How about that? Isn't that weird? And that's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. I had somebody that just texts and said, I thought that she said Lord of the Flies. Now, that would have been a series, right? 424.
Spoiler alert.
97, right, exactly. 97.1 FM Talk. Benjamin Akande, he is an economist now with Stifel Financial. Good friend of the show. He's coming up next. We have audio cut of the day in the next hour. Also, Congressman Billy Long, he is in the race for Senator Blunt's seat. We'll talk to Billy. He's a character. You're not going to want to miss that. Right after 5 on 97.1.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
30, 97.1 FM Talk. Get my country on a little bit this afternoon.
Did you grow up on a tractor? Did you not?
I was telling Dave this. You know what I've been listening to? I'm going to have to make a confession because apparently he's a racist and he's been canceled. But I was a little late to the game with Morgan Wallen. And that record that he put out, which is, it's a double record, is outstanding.
Really, really good.
Really good. And I like a little country. I like Thomas Rhett, for example, there. But I had not really listened to, outside of the things that were on the radio or on, you know, the highway on Sirius XM, I hadn't really listened to Morgan Wallen. And that's a great record. So hopefully he's not canceled. He made some big mistakes. I think we can recognize that.
He's coming back.
Yeah. I think he has a path to come back, which is going to be pretty helpful and therapeutic for more than just him. Benjamin Akande is with us this afternoon. He is an economist now with Stifel Financial, Senior VP at Stifel Financial. We've had many, many conversations over the years about the economy. Benjamin, welcome back. How are you?
Mark, it is great to talk to you, and it's great to be back in St. Louis. More importantly, it's a great opportunity to be here at Stifel Financial, and I'm having the time of my life, man.
Well, that's awesome. It's great to have you back. I know that there were a couple of changes in a very strange couple of years, especially with COVID last year, right?
Yeah, COVID was tough. I'd moved to Vermont, great place, good folks. But it was in St. Louis, and I missed St. Louis a lot, and got this great opportunity to return to St. Louis here at Stifel, and so I'm back home.
Did you at least leave Vermont with a pair of mittens like Bernie Sanders had?
I actually tried to get Bernie Sanders mittens, but they weren't available. I have my mittens. I have to admit, and I also have some really sick clothing for the next winter.
Yes.
I will be ready.
Oh, I bet you will, because, yeah, that we did have a stretch here, as you probably know. Even that stretch in February did hit St. Louis pretty hard. All right, so let's talk about where we are right now with the job market, the economy. I know there are inflation concerns. Let's start with inflation, just because we hear about inflation. You and I have talked about it. I'm not an economist. I get worried when I see prices going up. Is there going to be more of a long-term effect? It doesn't look good when it comes to inflation right now. I see some economists saying, look, there's nothing to worry about long-term. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, what we've seen with inflation over the last couple of months, it's reached a level not seen since the early 1980s. And if you recall back in the day, those are double-digit inflation rates. And when we start comparing what we're seeing right now with what we had back then, it's concerning. And the reality is that prices are rising much faster in the United States than anywhere in the world right now. And I saw a very interesting analogy the other day that I thought I could reference here. They took an example of a person that lives in Cleveland, Ohio. And let's say that person buys a three-year-old Toyota Camry for about $18,000 and fills the tank up for $28. This was around January this year. By May of this year, that car would have cost them 22% more. And then the cost of filling the gas tank is 27% more. And so what we're seeing here is that as the American economy has risen from this pandemic slumber, the price of durable goods and commodities have soared. And essentially that's what inflation is doing for us. And the sad thing about this is that, inflation usually hurts lower waged individuals much more than higher wage individuals, and so it's going to have a pervasive impact. And then secondly, I think inflation has the potential to upend asset markets. When you look at the impact that it could have on the asset market, I think that that's why we got to take a look at this, and we've got to be very very strategic as a country, as the Fed thinks about an adequate response to this. And you know, what is also interesting is this. I think we've got to realize that we've been in a very significant period of substantially low inflation. And so what we're seeing now begs attention. And we need to have a result.
Yeah, you know, but it's interesting. I just kind of flash back to previous conversations that you and I have even had over the years when I've asked you about inflation, and it never really manifested itself. Well, now it is. I mean, now we're seeing it, and the concern would be, where is it going to go from here? Do you think, what's the path to keep it in check for the Fed or from policymakers?
Well, I think, it just depends on whether interest rates stay low for a long time. And that is that. But what we're seeing here is that it only makes sense only if central banks do not feel forced to raise them to fight inflation. There's a tendency that if prices rise, increases too persistently, it could really upend the economic prosperity that we've seen for a long time. But there needs to be a reaction, but the reaction that does not need to be desperate. I think it needs to be well assessed, and I have faith in the Federal Reserve System of the United States that they will ensure that whatever that response is, and I'm not going to second guess what that response is at this time, whatever that response is measured and sustainable.
Benjamin Akande is with me, Senior VP at Stifel Financial. What are your thoughts on the labor market right now? You know, on the one hand, we have an eviction moratorium that has now been extended by the CDC, of all places. You have unemployment rates in some of these states right now where there are workers that are demanded, right? But the workers kind of, in some cases, want to sit on the sidelines. So how does this work itself out? And part of this has to play into inflation. I was asking somebody at Walmart last week that, hey, why are you out of so many things? And part of it was they couldn't get the truck drivers, to deliver the materials. It's not like the materials might not have been there, the products, but they couldn't deliver them. That's been happening even back to last summer with oxygen supplies in California and elsewhere. We heard about low oxygen levels. Some of that was because they couldn't find drivers, or the drivers were in quarantine, or things along those lines. All these things have ripple effects, right?
So you're right, Mark. I mean, the labor market is coming under strain as economic activities have shifted, and even after a rise of, 850,000 jobs in June, the number of people working in leisure and hospitality is 12% lower than before the pandemic. And what we're seeing here is that workers are reluctant to return to the, to work, which has pushed up wages. You know, hourly pay is almost 8% higher, than in February of 2020. Perhaps, what we're seeing here is that as the unemployment benefit expires in September, I would project that attitudes to work may change, especially at the bottom of the income spectrum, waiters, cleaners, et cetera. But all this suggests that the American economy will run hot with continual pressure on the Federal Reserve to tighten policy. And another thing that I think I'm really concerned about is that as more people get vaccinated in the summer of 2021 and beyond, I think we will start seeing probably an increase in demand for goods and services, and consumers going back to work, and more importantly, increasing their spending habits, and that's what we can hope for moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that I felt like we were there, like that. That's what was happening right now this summer. People spending money, people taking vacations, traveling, all of these things, and this has been unfortunately the week that pessimism has returned to me. And I hope I'm wrong about it. I opened the show with some anecdotal things this afternoon, just talking about what's happening with the numbers right now. But I fear as we slip into the fall that some of this stuff could move backwards.
Well, yeah, what we're going to see here is that, first of all, we wouldn't want to jump into any conclusions. I think we need to assess the fact that one of my concerns is that the cost of living is gradually sort of edging up as small businesses, because of inflation, are now sort of transferring that cost to us consumers. Sure. In terms of higher price. And I'm concerned about that. And I'm concerned about the impact that it's going to have on small business, and also the impact that it's going to have on consumers. So that's one concern for me. But then importantly, I think I want to look ahead and think about the infrastructure bill that's being put together by the Biden administration and his attempt to create a bipartisan approach to this. I think that infrastructure bill is going to be a significant addendum and catalyst to the U.S. economy if we can get it done. I think it's take out the politics, take out the partisanship. It's going to be good for America.
We probably talked about this 5 years ago, because I still contend that I wish it was one of the first things that President Trump did. I think he could have gotten a lot of bipartisan support. I'm worried now only because it is something that needs to be done, and there is bipartisan support, but Nancy Pelosi wants to play games with it, and they're going to ask for things that really don't belong in this bill moving forward, unfortunately, because the American people need it. I think the country needs it right now.
We do, and I think Nancy Pelosi it's not going to be able to keep this from happening. My projection is that when you look at this infrastructure bill, it started out as a $2 trillion proposal, and it had two parts. You had the hard part of the infrastructure, such as roads, bridges, broadband, water pipes, climate, building rehabilitation, electric vehicle, all that good stuff. But then you had a second portion, what they call the human side of infrastructure, which includes child benefits, universal preschool, paid family leaves, subsidies for child care and community college. So we've seen that $2 trillion proposal now come down to about $579 billion in new spending. And so what I'm thinking here is that there's a recognition and reality on both sides that they've got to make this thing happen. And I think this is where compromise, this is where common sense will take shape. And I think you're starting to see a coalition being built among the moderates and the Republican senators I'm feeling good about this, and I think we're going to get a good bill come
right
out.
That. I like the optimism,
and I think it'll pass in due time.
Meantime, I opened up my 401k statement yesterday. There was a long period. I think a lot of us last year we didn't want to see them, but the stock market is doing pretty well, right? And we're not talking about down days on Wall Street that often, are we?
No, we're not. Stock market is doing great, which is the American way. We want this, and I anticipate that. We'll continue to see some good days ahead on average. And that's why I love this industry. You get to be to feel the pulse of the American economy. And as an economist for close to 35 years, I'm excited about the future of this country and the future of the U.S. economy.
Like I said, I think I was until Monday, and now I'm a little bit tepid, but hopefully things are going to work themselves out. But I'm grateful and glad that you're back here in St. Louis, Benjamin. I look forward to more conversations because we've had some great ones over the years about where we're heading in this country with the economy. So that is
good
awesome.
It's good to be back, and I always say to people, they always talk, you've heard us saying that the grass that's farthest from us is the greenest. What I've found out is that the grass that's closest to us is the greenest, and that grass for me is St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, well, and sometimes it takes a little while to figure that out. Here's some other good news, because we do this. We've had all these. Well, no, it does. My wife's gone through a little process of that, too, working out of town a couple of times over the last 5 years. But we got to get you back here in the studio, too. We'll see you in person.
I will. I would love
you in
to come
years, probably. Right?
I've got to see you. Let me come in there and talk. And let's talk country music, too.
Oh, I would love it. And by the way, I got to tell you something, because many, many years ago, we were talking about my kids, and you were very generous in offering some mentorship. My son, Evan, who I was very concerned about, was in town the last couple of days. He's in Houston. He's doing much better. His life is on track. All those concerns, sometimes they work themselves out. So Benjamin,
they always do, and yeah. I look forward to touching base with him. I want to hear what happened.
I know he owes you an update, so I appreciate it. Thank you, Benjamin.
Take care, man.
All right, take care. All right. Just moments ago, got the email from Rockwood on the mask policy. I'll share that because I think this is going to happen for other school districts as well. But let me place some of this into perspective, too. We want to keep the kids safe. I want to keep my daughter safe. It's all about keeping people alive. We get that. But let's juxtapose that with this from Lieutenant Colonel Troy Doyle today in a tweet that I retweeted. This is horrifying, and it's not anything that anyone's going to go home and talk about tonight and say, look at all of the things. Lisa Clancy and Sam Page aren't going to talk about this. I bet even Tashara Jones won't even talk about how, as of yesterday, 63 children have been injured or killed in shootings in the St. Louis region. 63. 18 of them have died. 18 of them have died. So and that's far more than our, dying of COVID. So that's the crisis that we're up against here in the St. Louis. And that's real. It really is happening, and it's happening on a daily basis. All right. So for those of you who are in Rockwood, you probably opened your email already, but I was telegraphed on this earlier, and it's not surprising. I think that this is what they were going to do. There's a temporary, or I guess an interim superintendent, Tim Ricker, who's now in. They sent the email that said our number one goal is to keep students and staff healthy and in school. To that end, masks will be required inside all Rockwood schools and buildings for students, staff, visitors until further notice. Masks will be optional outdoors, which I got to give them credit for that, because they were wearing masks outdoors last year. Masks are required on all forms of public transportation across the country, including school buses. I guess is that a transportation policy overall from the whole nation? That's the way they put it here. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
True?
No.
Please understand that we recognize there's been much debate, blah, blah, blah. As a parent, I also want my daughter to be safe. I don't like the fact that she's going to have to wear a mask. But you know what she did say? And kids are going to say this.
Yeah, what'd she
because
say?
She says, I don't care. This was her quote. She says, I don't care if I have to wear a mask. I just want to see my friends.
Oh.
She doesn't want to be stuck at home.
Well, sure.
She
who
wants
would?
To be in school.
Blame her for that.
She had the first 6 weeks last year of kindergarten in my basement. Then we had two quarantine periods, which were ridiculous quarantine periods. So, these kids want to be in school. I think we're lucky. Here's what I would say. I don't want them to wear masks. I hope we can get away from this. But at the very least, we're talking about this. Let's not forget where we were a year ago.
Yeah.
Remember, I was having conversations, Dave, on the air on a regular basis, because we didn't know what these school districts were going to do.
Yeah.
I also came up with the Mark Reardon plan at that time. You remember?
It was a good plan.
It was a good plan, and it was the one that was implemented halfway through the school year, which could have been implemented at the beginning of the school year.
What was the Mark Reardon plan?
Mark Reardon plan, Sue, was that kids K through sixth grade are in school. I mean, for the junior high, for the high school, I took a wait-and-see approach. But at the beginning, there was no reason at the beginning of last school year that those kids should not have been in school. And we know that now. Yeah. So, you know, overly cautious, all of this stuff. So I felt pretty confident that's the way it should be then. And at the very least, you have high schools. I mean, they're not talking about keeping older kids. I think a lot of the older kids have been vaxxed, too. Now, I started off the show. We'll have some audio later, but I do have a little bit of concern just about the number of cases that are popping up just in my little circle of vaccinated friends. Not a ton, but enough to say, hey, wait a second, what's happening out here? And I just hope that people aren't getting, you know, super sick if they've been vaxxed. Dave, you know anyone that's been vaxxed that's been sick?
Not yet. Yeah. And I hate saying not yet, but that's kind of how I feel.
Well, because I don't know if the anecdotal evidence is the best way to take your temperature on what's happening with COVID.
Right.
I have said over the course of this pandemic that, and I think it was last fall. Last fall was a period where it was early in the pandemic. So March and April, at least in my world, with my friends, people I knew, there were a lot of people that had it. Then I went for months and months. Nobody had it. Then in the fall, when everything was peaking, that was the period. I would say November, December, January. We both knew, you know, a fair amount of people.
Sure.
You never did have it, though, did you?
COVID?
Yeah, COVID.
No, I never did either. But I had a fair number of people in my close circle of friends that had family members or themselves that had it.
Right. Yeah. Well, so, again, I think overwhelmingly, I saw some very encouraging stuff from the UK today. And by the way, I saw some research that really, and it's a little bit tough to get into the weeds here, and I'm running out of time this hour, but I saw some research that really put a big question mark into the Provincetown research about the vaccinated people getting the breakthrough infections and whether or not they could spread COVID. You know, that was something that was determined and interpreted as absolutely this is happening from the Provincetown example. I don't think we know that. In fact, I think there's research that's showing there are some questions. However, the other thing I said, I have my friend out west who said, and he's in the oxygen and nitrogen industry, and says that there are more requests for liquid oxygen in Florida right now than even at the highest part of the pandemic over the winter, and California is probably just 2 weeks behind. What does that mean? I'm just sharing the information.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.